You're listening to the All Systems Go podcast, the show that teaches you everything you need to know to put your business on autopilot. Learn how to deploy automated marketing and sales systems in your business the right way with your host, the professor of automation himself and founder of Automation Bridge, Chris Davis.
Welcome to the All Systems Go podcast. I'm your host, Chris L. Davis, the founder and chief automation officer of Automation Bridge, an online publication for small business marketing automation, where we focus on turning digital marketing professionals into automation service providers. And in this episode, I have Greg Jenkins, the founder of Monkey Pod Marketing, where he focuses on empowering entrepreneurs through online courses and educational resources. More specifically, Greg helps Keep and Infusionsoft users understand their marketing software in a different way and at a higher level to maximize the return on their monthly investment. And prior to MonkeyPod, Greg worked at Infusionsoft as a curriculum developer and a lead trainer for Infusionsoft University. And that is really how our paths crossed, is our mutual respect and love for educating the marketplace. Okay. Specifically to marketing automation. And Greg, everybody, for this episode, he's here to remove the confusion from crafting the customer journey. Okay, there's a lot that goes in to making sure that your customer journey is personalized and effective. And we're gonna have a candid conversation about Infusionsoft. It's unfortunate moniker that the marketplace gave it, and how to achieve success anyhow. I think that somebody from Infusionsoft is the appropriate person to talk about removing confusion. And you all probably already know where I'm going with this, but I say this in the podcast, and I just want to make sure that when we're all making fun of, and you know, we're competing, and even as users, we're selecting various software. Maybe one doesn't do something another does. Maybe one is just too hard to use. At the end of the day, Infusionsoft has done something no other platform has done. We talk about that in the episode, and we give them their just due and their respect. Okay, so I'm excited to have Greg on, who I have met only a handful of times. Well, actually, not even a handful of times, once. I met Greg once in person. But some people, you know, you meet, they have a lasting impact on you. And I would consider Greg beyond just an associate, but a friend. I trust his judgment. He's got a strong, thriving community of Infusionsoft professionals. And again, I couldn't think of anybody better than him to come on and really talk about how do we go beyond the confinements and complications of software at times and craft the perfect or ideal customer journey. All right. So before we jump into the podcast, if you're new, make sure you listen to this episode in its entirety and then leave a 5-star rating and review after you subscribe. Okay. Listen to it. See what we're about. I promise to over deliver. Okay, so whatever your expectation is, I'm here to exceed it. And you can show me appreciation by subscribing and leaving a 5-star rating and review. If you are a listener to the podcast and you're not subscribed yet, please do so. We're in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We're on YouTube. You can subscribe there. Make sure that you are subscribed and you leave a 5-star rating and review. It is greatly appreciated. So let's jump into the podcast with myself and Greg, and let's discuss this customer journey. Greg, welcome to the podcast. Always. You know what? I can't say glad to have you on, because that would be too small, Greg. Like, it's always, always good to connect. And I'm so happy to be able to have a conversation with you, because we always are connecting and engaging in some way. But now everybody gets to see it. Everybody gets to glean from it, man. So how you
doing? It's a privilege. I am a bona fide fan of the show, of Chris Davis. But yeah, man, I feel ya. I'm sure you get this, right? I feel like the word excited has been spoiled, because every marketer is like, I'm so excited to tell you about, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, no, but I'm actually excited to record this, right? Yeah. It's like, how do I tell you that it's not hyperbole?
right? How do I find another word? Right. You know, so I'm looking forward to this, and the listeners may not have a clue on what a treat this episode is going to be. And I'm looking forward to diving in, and maybe hopefully I'll be able to even put you on the spot. Like, that's the goal, is like, can I shake Greg? You know, you're so rooted in what you know. So that'll be interesting. But start from the beginning. Let everybody know a little bit about yourself and your business.
Sure, man. So my brand is Monkey Pod Marketing. And I serve small businesses, specifically Keep users. Yeah. And I do it through education and training, which is part of what sets my brand aside, is really focusing on helping those who want to understand the strategies that they're operating in their business and the technology that support those strategies. Because there are plenty of small businesses, successful and otherwise, who don't care how it gets done. They just want results, and they're outsourcing that. So I serve the DIYers, the people who do have an appetite for that and, you know, have their hands on the keyboard, their sleeves rolled up, and are pressing the buttons themselves. My introduction to entrepreneurship, well, I grew up in a small business entrepreneurial family, but I ran a business right after college, servicing and installing draft beer dispense systems. That was my birth into the small business world. A typical local service provider, you know, we had accounts that I would visit. We would do a cleaning every, 3 weeks for some accounts, 4 weeks for others. So it was a subscription kind of model. And it was entirely manual. You know, my CRM was a notepad in the center console of the van, where I would circle somebody's name if they called, and check it off if I called them back. And, very analog.
So you were
analog.
Even systematic then, Greg. You even had a system then.
I mean, I hesitate to describe it as a system knowing what I know now, but there was a process. Yeah, there always is. Yeah. And then I was 25, 26 years old, and I found myself burnt out. To grow the business, I only saw one path, which was just work more hours, knock on more doors and get more accounts. And if they had a draft beer system, we could clean it or add lines for them. If they didn't have a draft beer system, we could install it. But the problem with getting new accounts is then you have to do the work. You have to go fulfill on it. So I found myself in this cycle that I didn't know how to break out of, where I didn't like the path forward. The path for growing the business just didn't appeal to me. It just sounded draining. And I started to build a team, but then I found myself managing those people. And so I eventually, my business partner bought me out. I decided I needed a change, and I moved to Arizona, where a friend of mine said, "Hey, you should check out Infusionsoft," as the company was called at the time. And I said, "Screw you. I'm a beer guy, not a technology guy. Why would I look at this, nerdy Infusionsoft company?" And then A couple months later, while I was still unemployed, I finally was like, "Well, maybe I'll go check out this website." And Chris, I tell you, man, I was doing preliminary research to see if this was a company that I might be interested in, or there might be an opportunity for me at. Yeah. And watching the simple videos on their website, I was like, "Holy cow, this would have changed my life. This would have changed that business." Yeah. And this is what I was missing. But the interesting thing is that I didn't know to ask for it. I didn't understand that there were email follow-up systems, that I could put my clients on a recurring billing schedule and not have to drive to their restaurant to collect a physical check. Those were the things that I was doing. And the idea of optimizing meant finding a faster route to get to the restaurant, not finding a digital way to process that transaction. So my lens was just underdeveloped at the time. Mm-hmm. And it rapidly changed once I discovered Infusionsoft, and I did get a job there, onboarding new clients and working with them. And the light bulbs, plural, kept going off as I saw, the role that automation and systems and technology could play for simplifying or multiplying what a small business is about. Because my business would have been a perfect candidate for what these tools offer. Yeah. And so it became kind of a charge of mine to help as many small businesses as possible avoid those same, you know, potholes and pitfalls, because I had the scar tissue of kind of doing it myself. Yeah.
I love it, man. And it brings me back to my entry into Infusionsoft. And, you know, I had my introduction into business. I think I've said this before, was through internet marketing. People are shocked. I had no clue how to use the internet, man.
Sure.
I was proficient in blogspot.com, and that meant I knew how to follow blogs. Like, I knew how to find them and follow them and check them.
Still
every
didn't
day.
Know what an RSS feed was, didn't but you knew how to click subscribe.
Yeah. I was like, what is that? But you're bored at a corporate job every morning. I had a roster of blogs that I would check. It was like my newsletter. I mean, my newspaper. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And I just remember Office Autopilot being the only tool that people ever talked about. Mm-hmm. Now it's Entreport. And I had a couple friends, or I should say acquaintances, that I met through these programs that I enrolled in that needed help. So I started to do that. And I didn't even know that was automation at the time. I just thought, oh, this is software that you need in your business. It's business software is what I thought. And I remember when I was looking at trying, you know, I'm a web developer trying to make money. I'm like, where is the money? I have to differentiate myself. Like, everybody's a web developer. There's people's Greg, there was one person whose grandmother recommended a theme for them to download. And I said, you know what? The day I'm competing, no knock against grandmother. Grandmothers can be technically savvy, but absolutely, this one wasn't. I knew this one wasn't, Greg. It was different, man. It's like, you know what? I need to set myself apart, and I did not know how to. So actually, and what I want to talk about today, actually the term Confusionsoft is what attracted me to Infusionsoft. Because my thinking was this: if everybody's confused and doesn't know how to use it, and I learn how to use it, thus I become important, right? Like, I become valuable. I had no clue about the company, the backstory, where they were located. I just knew it was this green looking logo and the website was antiquated. It's nothing near what we see at Keep now. Sure. I mean, if we could just roll back the hands of time to what Infusionsoft looked like back then, oh my gosh. But I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it. And then there was the $2,000 starter fee. And I was like, maybe I won't do it yet.
How serious am I?
Right. Yeah. But back then, Greg, I have to tell you, man, it was a badge of honor to be able to pay that $2,000 Kickstarter fee eventually and then be paying $300 a month. Right. Like, was like that alone was like, hey, look, I'm an Infusionsoft user. So you knew, oh, that person has invested $3,000 and they're paying at least $300 a month. They must be
swag.
Curious,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And now, look, man, go ahead. And if a startup tries that now, oh, my goodness, you're done before you begin. So for somebody like yourself, man, again, I think you're the one of the most decorated. And the only reason why I say one, because I don't know everybody. Right. So I'm leaving some space. But for me, in my personal sphere, you're the most decorated Infusionsoft expert, I'll say. And I think what you mentioned earlier is what really sets you apart is the fact that you go from an educational perspective. And so many people, myself included back then, Greg, we were just trying to monetize your ignorance on the platform. You don't know how to do it. Pay me to do it and I'll do it and I'll make money doing it. So how Infusionsoft, rightfully so, unrightfully so, whatever your disposition is, there is the term Confusionsoft. It's been, I feel like the ClickFunnels group has maybe thrown it around a little more reckless, right?
They may have fanned the flame, so to speak. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like, okay, I see what you're saying, but you know, but at the end of the day, we have to be honest. Infusionsoft by Keep, you know, what they have done for the small business space has never been done. They revolutionized a space and equipped us with software that, as you mentioned, we didn't even know we needed, you know? So as many marks they get as making it confusing and this and that, it has fueled the success of countless businesses, man. And I don't want anybody new to the space to come in and slander that name without the scars and bruises. You know what? You can't say Confusionsoft if you just learned about, if you know it as Keep, right? And if you just learned about it 2 to 3 years ago, you can't say those words. You don't know what that, you know, you don't know what that means. You haven't gone through the flames, right? So in your experience, Greg, what I want to do is there's Infusionsoft users listening. There's maybe other platform users that are looking at Infusionsoft. What would your tips be in making it, you know, this term Confusionsoft, breaking away from that? How do we demystify how to leverage the true power of Infusionsoft by Keep? What approach and steps would you give people?
So there's a quote or a, you know, a rebuttal that you'll hear tossed around from the Infusionsoft faithful, which is like, it's a lousy carpenter who blames his hammer, right? And it's interesting because, you know, regularly I hear complaints from frustrated, you know, small businesses who are stuck on something and it feels confusing to them. And it doesn't help that, you know, confusion and infusion rhyme. So, you know, that situation, I mean, with the exception of the rhyming, is not unique to Infusionsoft. It's not unique to Keep. That exists in every community or every user base for any platform to some extent, right?
Yeah.
And there's
different
things that people get tripped up by. But what I like to remind people of is that this software, my experience is, you know, predominantly with Infusionsoft. That's where I've kind of planted my flag and the audience that I serve. But I think the advice that I'm going to give is agnostic of platform.
Sure.
I think there's this challenge that small business owners have where they look at a software and they think like, this is the software that I use. So therefore, you know, it's for me. And the reality is there are, you know, dozens or hundreds of business models in different industries, in different parts of the world, of different shapes and sizes, who all use that platform as well.
Yeah.
And so if this tool is so robust or so diverse that it can serve all of those types of people and all of those types of businesses, then there will be features and you know, use cases that aren't applicable to you. And so it becomes, it becomes a game of like, you know, how do I look at this set of, you know, 100 features, let's just say 100 for round numbers, and figure out which, you know, 25 I need for my business.
Yeah.
And like, that's, it kind of bends our brains a little bit because, you know, the like consumer in us, the thrifty consumer in us wants to like wring every drop of value out of the software.
Yep.
But the trap you fall into is you start clicking on stuff and using features that like aren't intended for you and they don't play a role in your business. And that is where I think it adds a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
Because you find yourself going down these rabbit holes, trying just to use the features for feature's sake because they're there, not because they solve a specific problem in your business or not because they add an element to the experience that you're creating with your customers. So rather than approaching it from like a software, like feature, you know, forward sort of perspective, it's really about defining first, what does your business need?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually recommend that people like write up the job description, like actually like almost as if you are hiring an employee. Like, what am I hiring Keep to do? What am I hiring ActiveCampaign to do?
Yeah.
What is its job in my company? And, you know, you write up, well, it's going to manage contacts. It's going to help, you know, follow up with new leads. It's going to X, Y, or Z. And then you go about, you know, finding the right tool, selecting the right tool that does, that fills that role, right?
Yeah.
And if it's Infusionsoft, if it's Keep, like, great, but it may not be. It may be that another platform, you're like, oh, I actually need Pipedrive. And that's, you know, the thing that, you know, gives me what I'm after. But until you have that clear, like, job description, it becomes, you know, it can be really challenging to explore your software because you don't have a specific, you know, roadmap for how you're planning to adopt it. So that's where I recommend people start is like getting clear first on the objectives that this is going to play for your business. And then remembering that like, you know, nobody said you have to use 100% of this software,
that's
right?
That's it, man. Yeah.
There's this unspoken like pressure on people to like use all these features, but like nobody's telling you to do that. And I wish you could like give people the blinders to only grab the things that they need or reframe it. Like, it's not about using 100% of the features. It's about using 100% of what your brand needs. And 100% is personal. It is like, it is your own like section of that pie. And like, if you can focus on that, you're exponentially more likely to succeed than starting the other way.
Greg, man, I'm loving this because, you know, I've always viewed it because like you said, it's not specific to Infusionsoft. You can get lost in any of these platforms and then they don't have to be all in ones. Right. And right, I always, sure, you know, I've always looked at it as, you know, these platforms become the buffet to the starving entrepreneur.
Yes.
Right. And what is the entrepreneur starving of? Success. They just want success. And they think they're, you know, everybody's gone to the buffet on an empty stomach. All of the food looks good. There's stuff that you know you don't like. And truth be told, after you've eaten it and you've satisfied that initial hunger, you're like, why did I put that in my body? Right. But they come into it and they're starving for some form of digital success. All of these features look good. And they think they have to fill their plate with all of these features and then go home and then use them all. When it's like, no.
Gluttons. You're gluttons.
Gluttons.
Yeah. Right? Everybody. Yeah.
Temperate. Yeah. Yeah. So it's to your point. How do I, because it's twofold, right, Greg? One is, how do I define just those features that I need? And then the discipline to be satisfied with just those. Right. And not get tempted like, maybe I should be using more, because there's some guilt I see some people have where it's just like, I'm not even using the platform to its capacity. So even when I was at ActiveCampaign, people would call and say, you know, they would apologize. I know I'm not using all of the settings, and I would have to stop them and say, listen, as long as you're using the features that are successful, you're using enough.
Yeah.
You do not have to try to use everything.
People shy away from, I think, my impression is that a lot of people shy away from like the ROI conversation, measuring ROI from our tools, right? Yes. But it is, if you treat it like an employee, right? Then what am I paying this employee? And you know, there are versions of Keep that cost much less than $300 a month now, but let's say it's $300 a month, okay? So you're paying $3,600, $3,900 a year. I'm not a mathologist, but you're paying a couple thousand dollars a year for this employee. And so the question is like, well, is it worth it? Is it paying a positive ROI? And if you're not using any of the features, it's probably not worth it, right? Yep. But where is that break-even point? And like, you remember, this employee you're hiring, it doesn't take days off. It works 24 hours a day. It doesn't need, you know, PTO, right? Like like that's part of the equation here. So it should be a financially responsible investment. You're hiring this tool to play a job for your business, and you're paying it hopefully much less than you would be paying an employee to do a similar role. And they're, you know, with the nature of automation is that it doesn't get tired, right? So you can load it up and you can, you know, pour more into it without necessarily, I mean, depending on your version limits are, you might need to like level up the number of contacts or the number of emails or the different, you know, add-ons. But the point here is that like, do the math, right? Let's figure out like, where does that ROI come from? And you might find that you launch, you know, a single automation, you launch one campaign that, you know, nurtures people after their consult and drives them towards joining your membership, right?
Yeah.
And if that earns ROI for you, if that like, you know, pays for the subscription, then anything else you do with this platform is gravy, right? Is icing on the cake. But people come at it from the other perspective where they're like, but I'm not this, that, or the other thing. And it's like, well, okay, that's just opportunity. But my recommendation for people is to like decide where that point of return will be, where that break-even point is with your software. Yeah. And when you like get started, or now, if you got started years ago and never did this, do it now. Yeah. Like focus on you know, measuring, like, is this software paying for itself? Because without fail, whether it's Keep or anything else, there will come a time where you are like frustrated with it, or you're disappointed, or there's a bug and you're like questioning this investment.
Yep.
And the way that you like take emotion out of that equation is by going to the ROI and being like, as frustrated as I am by this instance, it still made me, you know, 10 grand last month and I spent $300 on it. So like, here's the trade-off, right?
Man, that's so powerful, Greg, because you're right. That ROI conversation. It's, you know why it's not had? Because that same onus that you're putting on the technology is really yours. Right. And I don't want to own that responsibility of success. Yes. Technology. I just want it to do it. I want to pay for it. Do what somebody said and be successful. Why do I have to define what success looks like? Why do I have to measure that? Why do I have to set objectives that don't just keep my people aligned, but my technology too? Right.
It's tough, Chris. I'm a people person. And I believe the best in people. And that's part of why I love the education space, is because people are like, you could tell when they have an appetite for it. You could see when the light bulb goes on. Yeah, and it's really rewarding. And there are also plenty of people who are just looking for a crutch. They're just looking for a scapegoat. And it's, you know, I think that if you really dug in with a lot of the people who are complaining about ConfusionSoft or it not performing, you would discover that there's an underlying issue with their business model or their deliverable or the experience that they're creating. Yes. And that the problem, you know, didn't go away when they switched away from ConfusionSoft, and it probably existed before they adopted ConfusionSoft. Mm-hmm. And they're projecting it onto the software.
Absolutely.
But you know, you can trace that back to, in most instances, you know, misaligned expectations. Like, well, when you signed up, like, what were you hoping this would do? And you know, how was that expectation set from the onset?
Yeah. And I want to talk about, I want to ask you about some of your most successful campaigns in Infusionsoft, just to give our listeners some insight. But before that, how do you, you know, it's one of the hardest things to do is untrain, right? Get people to unlearn these misguided approaches to not just the software, Greg, right? Just marketing automation in general, marketing and sales automation. In your experience, as you've been educating and really championing, being the forerunner, how about that?
Yeah.
Man, that word just won't come out.
I do that all the time.
Right. And leading with education, because that's an intentional choice. Greg, I know you. I know your business and I know your brand. At any point, you can switch it to where the focus is revenue based. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, look, this is more leads, more clients. But you intentionally choose to educate in this path. What are you finding are some of the key things that help people unlearn this mandated broad stroke approach that gets them in a position where they're approaching the tool incorrectly, they're blaming the software? How do you get them to change that approach, man?
Yeah, I think I describe education, and you might appreciate this, as the get rich slow gig. I chose education because number one, because there were fewer people doing it, right? Yes. Like I recognized a need that Infusionsoft users were having to adopt the software, and there is a learning curve with it, because not necessarily because the software is complicated, though that's a fair criticism, but because small business is complicated. And so understanding the parallels between your business and the software, where they overlap, where they can serve one another and where they shouldn't, is just it's an intricate conversation. So that's where I planted my flag. But the second prong of education was that I knew I could reach more people. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you go the service provider route, if you're working with clients one-on-one, your bandwidth is finite. And in the education space, you know, ostensibly your reach is infinite. And so that was really appealing to me, was knowing I could serve a much broader audience, create a bigger impact that way. But your question was you're fighting against these misconceptions, these myths that are being perpetuated still, right? I think there are fewer people like you and I helping people understand. You actually had an episode recently. It's not about the technology, right? Yeah. Which was great. And I will give your listeners a plug to go listen to that one once you're done here. Okay.
right. Don't get it. Yeah.
But the way that I combat those is, I mean, it's not easy and it's ongoing. So I'm constantly looking for new ways to shine a light on that, to help people come to that realization. But what I have, what I have distilled my learnings down to is a process that I call the one conversation. Mm. And I call it that because if I could have only one conversation with any small business owner on the planet, then this is the conversation I would have. Mm. And there's a bunch of terms for it. I'm actually kind of excited to share this with you, Chris, because I'm sure you'll have your own like vernacular, your own way of thinking about this. But effectively, it challenges a business owner to look at like their product or whatever it is that you sell. And if you sell multiple things, just start with one of them as the, you know, as this central piece on a timeline. So extend a line out in either direction from that. Okay. And you have everything leading up to that product. Then you have the actual purchase of that product. And then you have everything that comes afterward. Yeah. And the composition of those three things is your customer journey, right? You've got the pre-purchase, you've got the purchase experience, and you've got the post-purchase. Yeah. And you know, right just from there, you could see light bulbs going off for people because they're like, oh yeah, after the purchase, you know? Because so many people, I think you talk about this one as well in the delivery episode you did, but so many people, like they treat the sale as the destination and they forget to design the experience they want their customers to have, right? Yeah. It's just, and we've all experienced that as a consumer as well, where you buy something and then you just, it's just a cliff. There's crickets.
Yeah.
So I challenge people to say, all right, draw that timeline out, right? And then start to identify what are the milestones that that represent progress along it. And maybe it's just like, maybe it's just three. Maybe it's like, okay, they joined our webinar, or they requested a you know, a quote, or they attended an event, and then they bought. And then they bought again, or joined our membership group, or joined our partner program, or told a friend, right? So maybe there's only three milestones, but the more milestones you can get, the more granular you can get, the better. Yeah. And it becomes about those gaps in between them. It forces you to start looking at, okay, well, what paves the path from milestone one to milestone two, from milestone two to milestone three, or three to four. And what I think a lot of people find is that there are like very clear drop-offs where they either have no follow-up in place, or they have, you know, insufficient follow-up, or where just like it's disjointed because it was designed at a different time. And now like the things around it don't fit. And so what you're looking for is not just like, do we have something planned for each one of these stages, but are they cohesive? Is there like a continuous thread that guides our leads and prospects all the way through this experience? And then, you know, the one conversation kind of evolves like, okay, so you got your milestones, you got your bridges that, you know, kind of, you know, span the chasms in between. Now, where would automation enhance this? Like, where can we use automation to lighten the lift so that if we dial up the traffic, we're not going to feel overwhelmed. We're not going to like fall apart, struggling to fulfill for these clients or what have you, but where could we use automation? Not necessarily to take people out of the equation, but to allow our human effort to be used more strategically, right? Because I think that's a misconception about automation, is people think it means like less humans. Yeah. And it doesn't have to. It only means, you know, automation only means cold and robotic if it's done poorly, right? Yeah. If it's done well, it allows you to focus on the things that are the best use of your time. And if that's like, you know, having an onboarding phone call in person with people, then keep doing that. If it's writing a, you know, a handwritten thank you card, then keep doing that, right? Yeah. I think that there's an important, I think it's important to retain some, you know, aspects of the human intervention here, but to use automation so that you're controlling where it is, so that you're not creating, you know, bottlenecks or pinch points for yourself.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I hear the phrase, I know I should be automating this, or I know like this could be automated.
Maybe.
And,
yeah.
Right. Right. And, and the young me, trust me, the young, just, I've got it in Infusionsoft. Just, I put it on everything. Look, I'm trying to automate my tying my shoelaces. Right.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. But the more mature me respects process now. And when someone makes that statement, it's like, well, maybe. Maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. Perhaps I could make the case, maybe you need less. And they look at me, they're like, wait a minute, but you're the the automation professor. Why are you not telling me more? And it's like, look, man, Greg, what I loved about what you just explained was it's all about the customer journey. There is nothing more important than that journey. And automation is an aid to ensure that that journey is as personalized and perfected, not perfect, perfected as possible. And when I think of perfected, you talked about the milestones. When someone is on their way to a milestone and they drop off, automation is there to catch them and just put them right back on the path. That's it.
Yeah, it should make them feel led. It should help them understand like, oh, here's the thing I'm supposed to do next, right? As humans, we want to feel confident like on where we're going. You as the architect in your business probably know, but does your prospect, does your customer at each junction like know what they should be doing next? And that's where automation like can lead them. I want to call out, as much as it is about the customer journey, not every element in their journey is customer facing. And that's important as well. It's like you can use automation to hold yourself accountable, to remind you of the things you should be doing, to remind your team of the things they should be doing. That's a big part of like automation. If you only design customer facing interactions or steps, like that's fine. But you're missing out on, I would argue, 50% of what is automated happens behind the scenes. It still influences their customer experience, but it doesn't have to be, a touch point that goes out directly to them in an automated fashion.
Yes, Greg, I'm going to show my hand here. One of my favorite things, I'll tell you what it was and how it evolved. One of my favorite things was internal notifications. I am the king of internal notifications. I will send those before I send an email, right? Because it lets me know without being logged into my system what's happening. Now, in between those milestones or throughout the customer journey, I have what I call indicators of interest. Every action is not important. I don't care about every action, but I know the actions that are indicators of high interest, and I just want to be informed. Right. So I love getting those reminders when it was just the power of me. It reminded me what to do. And now that I can send them, in an automation, do an if else or a decision diamond and determine who gets that notification to keep my team in the loop. It has evolved from email now to Slack. Greg, I cannot tell listeners, if you do not have a dedicated Slack channel for your CRM to send notifications of indicators of interest throughout the customer journey, that do it. Do it. Oh my goodness.
It's empowering, right? Ooh. It helps you just create a deeper level of insight into your audience, into their engagement, their behavior, and into your journey. What patterns am I seeing? Because what you may find is that like you thought you had these milestones in order, but people are like jumping around or doing things in a different progression. And that's okay, right?
That is.
I do describe this as a linear process because in a perfect world, like it would be, but rarely is that the case, right? Your business probably has converging and diverging journeys and that is okay.
Yep.
But each one should be mapped, right? Like it shouldn't end at a cul-de-sac. It should lead back to an on-ramp in that main freeway that guides them somewhere.
Man, that's a quotable for you, Greg. We're going to turn that into a quotable. It should not lead to a cul-de-sac.
There's got to be a plan.
There's got to be a plan. Get them on that road that doesn't end. And I'll tell you, man, you just can't stress enough that the customer journey is not reactive. Right. It very much is proactive. There should be no step that somebody takes that you're like, oh, how did you do that? What do I do?
Here's the thing, listeners, with or without your consent or design, your customer journey already exists. It is already happening. It may as well be something that you are proud of, that you intended, and that consistently produces an experience that you are proud of. Right. Like it's already there. If you have had customers, they came from somewhere and they had a fulfillment experience. Yep. The challenge is like, When was the last time you looked at it? What is the last time you like poked at it and thought, challenged, why is it that way? Why, you know, who set that up, and or did we, right?
Yeah, Greg, let me share this as well. Oh man, you got me wide open right now, Greg. This is fun.
All right.
One of the notifications that I send to my team in Slack is when somebody becomes a customer. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's not about, us celebrating, though we do put emojis and all of that. You should celebrate your wins. When they become a customer, what I do is I send a notification the same what they purchased, and to make sure you check their contact record that they use if they use a different email address. It seems so simple, right, Greg? But you already know where I'm going. It can disjoint that entire customer experience.
Because if they have a different record with a different email, who's receiving the promotional emails, they don't feel responsible for using two emails. They're like, well, you should know, right? Yeah, you should know. That's a tricky one. Because the system, you know, how do we expect automation to catch that? How does it know that there could be more than one Chris Davis, right?
Yes.
You're the favorite, but there could be more than one. Right.
Yes.
Great.
And it's the hardest thing. So there's no automation.
Yeah,
that is a manual check.
Let me give you a little aside, deep dive for the technical listeners. I do something similar when we have a new member join my MonkeyPod community, but it's an email, not a Slack channel, which I might steal. Yeah. And it goes to my community manager. Her name is Jade, and it goes to me as well. Instead of just using like a static emoji, which is fine, I use Zapier to pick from a spreadsheet a list of celebratory gifts. So I've got, 15 different gifts. Yeah. It's like, Michael Scott and Dwight from The Office, like partying or celebrating. And so it randomly chooses one of these gifts. Wow. And so it cycles it into the email. So each time we get a notification saying there's a new member, it uses a different GIF. And periodically I pop into there to add a few more, but I've curated this list of like celebration gifts, knowing that it's going to grab a different one, which is just it adds a layer of fun and originality to it, where, it is automated, but it doesn't feel uniform. It doesn't feel repetitive because it cycles through those.
I love it. That is amazing, man. Actually, as you were explaining that, I'm like, there are so many other applications for that same automation.
Totally. Right? Well, I actually got that from a customer of mine who was like, hey, how can I create this thing? When we send a company-wide sales notification, it uses a random rotating GIF, and we came up with that solution together. And then I went and adopted it myself. Yeah.
I love it.
So shout out to Brett from CrewTrax for helping me come up with that one.
Thank you, Brett. And it helps us highlight the point. Guess what? When you were mentioning that, Greg, I did not feel limited that I can only do it in Infusionsoft.
I feel limited, right?
Like I can only do it in ActiveCampaign, only HubSpot. That's the power when you break free that the tool is mandating what you do and you understand like your goals and what you're trying to achieve. And you're willing to say, okay, I would like to send a different GIF every time. That's the process. Now make the tool bend to that. Don't you dare bend your strategy right to the tool. It's backwards. And I mentioned it earlier. I want you to share. I'll share one too, but I want you to share the first one that comes to mind, because I don't want to say the most. I want you to share the first one that comes to mind when you think of the campaign that you built that is time tested and this thing just keeps on working. What is that campaign for you in Infusionsoft?
Yeah, so I will say that I don't think this is a hot take, at least not for you, but I think some people may not feel this way until they dig in. But I think that there is a disproportionate focus on lead generation in small business. I think, far too many businesses, it's sexy, right? They're focused on, landing pages and lead capture and their ad strategy. Yeah. And yes, that's important, but it is only a piece of the puzzle. And I think that people generally just don't focus enough on, the optimization of like how we're converting leads or how, their path to becoming a customer or their experience as a customer. Mm-hmm. So like a tried and true campaign of mine is not a revenue producing campaign, but it is the experience that parallels one of my virtual courses, right? So the one I'm thinking of is specifically the CB Trilogy course, which teaches the foundational concepts and advanced features within the campaign builder inside Keep. Yeah. And, you know, when somebody buys, right, it creates access to them, and it uses dynamic content, which is an Infusionsoft feature to, forecast out the schedule, right? If you bought this course today, if you watch the modules in this order, you're going to be done by this date. And it sort of lays it out for them, all relative to when it is sent, so that it feels like, okay, this agenda has been prepared for me, right? Here's where I go. And then as they participate in the course, I'm using a third-party tool plus this to update their contact record as they're watching, you know, videos. As they start a video at 30 seconds in, it updates it. And then as they finish the video, so it catches, hey, if they left off in video 3 of chapter 1, right, they're going to get a prompt that communicates with them and says, hey, video 4 is where we tackle, you know, this next topic. And like, don't, you know, you're missing out. So it's constantly leading them because, I don't know, this is going to sound kind of basic, but you know, that my content is only as valuable as their willingness to consume it, right? If somebody buys that course and doesn't do the work, the content doesn't serve them. And that creates a customer who, through no fault of my own, may resent MonkeyPod because they didn't, you know, do the work or didn't fulfill on it. So I use automation to do some handholding there to guide them through that experience, to make sure that, you know, it's prompting them at the right points. I do give people the option to opt out of that because it can feel a little big brothery. And so I want to make sure that they've got some influence, some agency in their experience. I think that's another important layer of automation is like, you can automate the majority of use cases, but there will be a minority of customers for whom that is not their preference. And you can account for that by, you know, just giving them a choice. Hey, click this button to fast track to the end, or click this button to turn off these notifications, et cetera.
Yeah. I always tell people the exit should be just as big, if not bigger.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here's, I think content producers. Yeah. At large. We sometimes apologize for, like, you know, if this wasn't valuable, or if this wasn't a fit, or et cetera, if you're not interested, we sort of like hedge our conversations and our information that way. But the people who aren't, for whom it's not a fit, have tuned out. They're gone, you know? Yep. Like, the only people listening to this podcast right now are interested. They've lasted however many minutes into this interview because they're interested. So, you know, there's a piece of me that's like, well, double down. The same thing is true for your marketing. As your marketing builds, the people who are still reading, still opening, are telling you something by being there. And you can use that. But as you said, I think it's equally important to give them an exit, you know, an escape hatch or an eject button. You know,
we're not holding anybody hostage, right?
That's like,
who we're for, we're confident in our content. And I love your example. I have one similar campaign similar than the one that you mentioned that I do like, not as customized and personalized as yours. And I would say for me, I've got like a qualifier automation, you know, that and actually the automation is basic because the automation just sends out the emails. But my software, the third party software that I'm using to qualify, does the routing. So when you look at it, they look like disjointed automations.
Yep.
But if you understood that the third party was doing the routing and sending them, man, it's one of the, again, 2 to 3 emails per outcome. You know, most people who run some form of quiz online probably have a similar version, but it's so intentional. And what I love about it is, you know, personalization is really easy when you know the previous step. Right. It's when you don't know the previous step because you're not tracking, you're not intentional with building out the journey, is where personalization is like, what do I say? Let me just put first name in the subject line.
You've done an episode on this, haven't you? Is like what you are listening for and how you could use that to impact their experience. Yeah.
Yes,
I'm telling you, man, it's the easiest thing that most people aren't doing. Every time your prospects take an action, like you said, not everything needs to be tracked.
Yes.
But when they click a link to a specific blog post, they're telling you, this is something I'm interested in. When they click a link to a specific product, I have a campaign. I call it, actually, it's a series of campaigns. I call it the Mona Lisa. And it starts when people visit any of my sales pages. If you go to any checkout page, but don't check out, right? 20, 30 minutes later, it's just an abandoned cart email. Sure. I call it, do you watch Parks and Rec? Are you familiar with that show?
Yeah.
So there's a character in it called Mona Lisa Saperstein, John Ralphio's sister, who has this line where she's like, money, please. And she's asking her dad for money. So I call it the Mona Lisa because it's basically just reaching out to that person who you know was just on your sales page and saying, hey, you know, are you interested? Did you want to check out? Did the ice cream man drive by and you got distracted, right? Let's get you back to that sales page.
Yes.
But I've added layers to it over the years, and I don't send that promo if they've purchased the course before, right? Because if they visit that page and they already have bought that thing, can you imagine if that sales email shows up, right? So I add decision logic. And if they are a referral partner of mine, instead of sending them the follow-up link, I send them their promotional link. Hey, you were just on this page. Were you looking for this link so that you could recommend it to someone else, right? So there's, I think there's just small tweaks like that that you can do based on what you already know about the people in your audience to make their experience feel more personal, right? And that's, you know, automation doesn't, like I said, doesn't have to be cold and robotic. If it's done well, it can feel personal and valuable.
Yeah. And you said something, Greg. I got to just do a quick highlight. Then I want to do a 2-round quick. What is it? Fast action, fast answers, whatever it is.
Lightning round.
Yeah. Lightning round. There it is. Okay. Lightning round. You said I've added layers to this automation as time went on. And that is it. What's in there subtly is your expertise and experience with not trying to do too much too soon, too early. Right. I was just sharing with my community early today. I said, you know, I have this new process that I've been thinking through, and I haven't automated it because it's a new process, because that's my fundamental rule. I don't automate new processes. I need to work it and figure out, get a feel for this thing first. But when you say add layers, it just speaks to, you know, I've said it many times, you know, your first time is your worst time. Don't try to get it perfect. Most people look at somebody's layered solution and that's what they say, I want built. And it's like, you know what? You didn't even need 10 layers. You needed the core and like 1.5 layers and you were fine.
But
they're anchored on, I need the whole thing. Give me the whole onion. It's like, you don't need all those layers.
Launched doesn't mean finished. Don't let perfection get in the way of progress. There's, you know, a dozen different ways to say this, but here's the thing, right? As small business owners, we are, you know, intensely passionate about our brand and our product and proud of it, as we should be. So we have this, we have this tendency to like want everything to be perfect, buttoned up, dialed in, you know, and just like finished in order for us to get it out the door. But what I find time and time again is that if you can be willing to get that first version live, the things you were like kind of hoping to add, your customers and the data behind their experience will tell you if those are the right next steps, right? Because we have hunches. We have like, I want to add this GIF, or I want to create this other page and like link them to that. But maybe the data will tell you that's not a priority, and instead you should put your focus over here. And so launching can really be liberating. It can help you reprioritize, or you might find that it works as is, and it's producing what I needed it to produce.
Yep. New layers are necessitated by that contact throughput, man.
That's it.
Get people through there. See what they're saying. All right, Greg. Oh my goodness, man. By the way, everybody, it's like this every time, just so you know. I want to do a lightning round to serve our audience even more, man. Two questions. First round, when it's time to build out a campaign in Infusionsoft, are you A, analog in some capacity or digital flowchart in some way, or are you using Keeps campaign builder because they have the published and draft mode where you can draw it out? Infusionsoft is unique to where you can add notes anywhere on the canvas, so it's a really flexible, free-flowing builder. Which approach are you taking?
I build it in the campaign builder. I was hired at Infusionsoft in March 2012, which coincidentally was the same month the Campaign Builder was released. So my like relationship to and understanding of automation has evolved like in that context. So it is like a second language that I speak or like a comfort zone for me. So that is where I spend most of my time. But interestingly, when I collaborate with others, I have to like pull myself out and like go to a Google Doc and organize the email copy and like kind of, you know, map things together. I use draw.io a fair bit, which is another like flow charting kind of tool in the Google suite. But you know, I'm a solopreneur. Well, I do have a community manager, Jade, but that's a recent hire as of last year. So most of my processes, it's just, you know, it's just me. And I have an idea for a blog or a YouTube series called Co-Working with Myself. It's just like conversations like with the different, you know, Greg, the CEO, Greg, the marketing guy, Greg, the social manager, right? Like all these different roles that I play in my business. But fortunately we often agree the different versions of me. So I build in the Campaign Builder and I do use the notes pretty extensively. With like, here's the to-do list. Here's where I left things off. Here are the things that are missing. I find it's just a nice way to keep everything visually represented on the same canvas. And if you, you know, if you followed the one conversation example I gave earlier with the you know, milestones and the bridges in between, there are direct parallels to Infusionsoft's goals and the sequences in between. It's a really natural transition there. And I know that, you know, the other automation platforms have their equivalents for that. There's you know, technology to support this, you know, the same type of flow. I just don't have all the vernacular, you know, nailed down for each other platform.
It's good. One of the things that I do enjoy about the Campaign Builder in Infusionsoft is how text friendly it is. So when I was using it at Lead Pages, those sequences, you weren't limited to just like two words and all, like, you could really define the sequences before somebody went into them. And then, of course, you couple that with the notes and the fact that the canvas is open. It doesn't snap. Now, granted, back in the day, I'll date myself here. Back in the day, everybody, there used to be a time where if you had like a spider web looking automation, you were the you were the expert. The more complicated you can post a picture of your campaign, the more
flex.
Right. It's like, look at all of these lines. Right.
Yeah.
And it's since then migrated. I like the cleanliness that I'm starting to see now out of just everyone across the board. But yeah, man, I remember using empty sequences just to make sure that because most of the time you have to use an empty sequence if you want to use a decision diamond and kind of skip somebody on if you didn't want to use a goal. So, yeah, that visual representation. And I also like how it shows where somebody has been. Right. How
there many is people a
have been there. Who's there now? You know, things of that nature.
Yeah, it gives you sort of a visual like understanding of the flow, the path people are taking, which can, you know, can be enlightening if it doesn't match up with what you may have thought.
Right, right.
There's a quote I'm reaching for, and I don't have it, so I'm hoping you can fill me in, or maybe it's not a quote. It's like a concept. I'm picturing like an arc, and there's like simplistic at the lower left-hand corner of that arc. And then at the top, there's like complex. And then on the right, there's simple. And the point is that like simple is on the other side of complexity, right? Simplistic is like really basic and like, you know, in many cases, not valuable. And then there's like complex where like you're solving a problem, but you're doing it in a complex way. And then it takes like to push past that another level of expertise to be able to distill it down into simplicity. And that's where I think we're talking about with those like spiderweb campaigns. Oftentimes, as impressive as those may be, they were overkill or they were a workaround because somebody misunderstood a feature or didn't, you know. And if you can press on that and push through that complexity, oftentimes you can get to that next level of like, no, like here's really the same outcome, but done in a more manageable, understandable way without compromising the experience we're providing.
Absolutely. All right. Final round of the lightning round. You mentioned one, but if there is any two to three third-party plugins you feel like every Infusionsoft user should have. I know one is a gimme. We both used the first one, which you've already said. I'll let you say it.
But. I'm a big fan of Plus This.
Yes.
Not just it's tough to say, like, what does Plus This do? Because each of their features are kind of like standalone functionality that, solve problems in different ways. And it's not just an Infusionsoft tool. I believe they also integrate with a handful of the other platforms out there. Mm-hmm. So feel free to check it out. Yep. But what I love about Plus This is how responsive their team is. I'm the type of guy where, like, as I'm using a feature, I'll be like, ooh, it'd be great if that, you know, had this or if that could do that. And so I suggested in their user group, and they're a small enough company that they can respond oftentimes quickly and add these, you know, tweaks and modifications. So I love the way that they are pivoting, that they're, you know, solving problems in real time. And that they're it, like any tool, right? You want to measure the ROI of it. But Plus This makes it super easy because they're, you know, it only takes two or three of their features to justify whatever you're paying. They have a $40 a month package or an $80 a month package. And I find it's a no-brainer, especially because every feature that they offer it solves a problem. Like, they wouldn't offer a feature if it like didn't do anything, right?
Yeah, but it's there
because somebody or a bunch of people more likely were like, hey, we would really love it if we could XYZ. And so Plus This kind of steps in and has this collection there. So Plus This is a must have. I'm a Zapier fanboy. I didn't get it for a while. I was like, man, I'm like, what am I missing on? Everybody's talking about Zapier. But you have to remember, I worked at Infusionsoft.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hypersensitive to the, like, another add-on conversation. Like, everybody, you know, small businesses are oftentimes, you know, making ends meet and have to be budget conscious. And so recommending additional tools was something that I avoided because I wanted to, that's actually part of why I have the expertise I do with the native software. It's just from, like, forcing myself to try to, like, make everything work in-house as use all the native functionality. But Zapier is an essential integration, and it goes well beyond, you know, its power with Keep. It has internal functionality. I use it for all of my social syndication. When I publish a new blog post or a new YouTube video, I've got Zaps set up that go to all my social channels, not just once, but, you know, at a cascading interval so that they get more mileage out of them. I just can't say enough good things about Zapier. I recently added this where I use Zapier to create certificates for all my courses using Google Slides. So I set up a Google Slide template, and then when somebody finishes a course, you know, using the Plus This video tracking, I know that they've completed the course. Yeah. It takes their information, posts to Zapier, uses Zapier to create a new template from that Google Slide, which can merge in their name and the date and my signature. And then it exports that slide as a PDF, which I can store in a custom field on that contact record and ship it off to them. It's totally not necessary. But I get it. It's not doing anything. They're not expecting it, but it's a nice to have.
Automation
when you get to that point where you're past the ROI and you're talking about, like, what else could I be doing, right? Yeah. Think about the ways it could enrich your customer experience. And some of those things are non-essential, but those are what differentiate your brand and what people talk about.
Man.
So Zapier would be tool number two. You know what? A couple of years ago, I would have said Wistia as tool number three. There's other video hosting platforms out there, but I love the tool set Wistia has. I've actually been leaning more and more into YouTube just from, like, a SEO strategy perspective. YouTube gets the search rankings and reach that way. So I have been using less of Wistia. But I'll say I'll go with Access Ally, which is my membership plugin.
I love Natalie.
Natalie and Robin, they are great. We live in the most connected day and age there ever has been. Is true every time I say it. But more and more, I find that people want to do business with people, with businesses that we know and that we feel good about. And I have nothing bad to say about the team at Memberium or Customer Hub or some of the other membership platforms out there. But I just really like the Access Ally team and their community and what they stand for and what they're about. And it helps that Access Ally has, you know, built in e-learning tools, progress tracking and video tracking and some of their own features there. So it works really well. But Access Ally is just a personal choice. The value it offers is a membership experience, and it works with WordPress, but there are others that, you know, are standalone. Yep. And that creates a private environment where I can host content for people and their access dictates what they do and don't see, which
it
fits naturally with my business model. Yeah. But I think it's also, I think more businesses have an opportunity to use something like that than they may realize. I would argue most businesses could have a customer center or a billing center or a training center that helps empower their users. Yeah.
Greg, this is a whole nother episode. I'm taming myself not to go there.
That's all right.
You know what? I'm going to say it. Bold statement alert. I feel that platforms, the misinterpretation, and sometimes it's from their marketing, of platforms like Kajabi really miss that point. You know what I'm saying? Like they missed that membership for customers and that access via levels integrated with your CRM. They just miss it. And again, no knock against Kajabi and Kajabi users. I just want to make it.
I've used Kajabi. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
It's just a different experience, right? If I'm looking for that very course friendly, you know, go through achievement base, go ahead, use Kajabi. But
it's easy to make Kajabi look good.
My goodness. Yeah. It's beautiful templates, right? Mm-hmm. But if I want to give a more comprehensive experience beyond courses, right? And restrict content, give my people somewhere to go to do some training on whatever the case, I'm beyond that. So it's okay to keep these platforms in their respective modes, although they don't necessarily want to be boxed in. That's true. You know, I get it. So, Greg, I can't thank you enough, man. Again, we can go on for hours, not just minutes, but hours. Man.
I am not known for my brevity. Yeah. So I appreciate you indulging me. Yeah.
Yes. No, this was good. And I know it's going to be highly valuable. People have heard something. They're like, how do I learn how to do that? Wait a minute. Rewind. You will probably need to listen to this one a couple times. And if you were listening to it at 2x, because you know these podcast apps, you might want to slow it down, because right in the middle there was a lot of nuggets, you know, dropped there. So if somebody wants to get connected with you, Greg, learn about your community, or just stay connected in any capacity, where should they go?
Yeah, monkeypodmarketing.com. You'll find it all there. If you are specifically looking for the community, you could go to ogmembership.com. I learned like a year ago, I learned how to buy a domain and just redirect it wherever I want. So I went on a little spending frenzy, getting all my URLs dialed in. But I am not hard to get a hold of, and I love these types of conversations. So feel free to drop me a line on any of the social channels, reach out. If you have questions about anything we talked about here. But yeah, this was an absolute blast, Chris. I can't thank you enough, man.
Yes. Thank you, Greg. We'll have the links, of course, in the show notes. And man, Greg, I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time, man.
All good. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode. And I guess maybe I should have done a better job warning you on the front end. Whenever Greg and I get together, that's what I was really excited about. It's like we have so many conversations, whether it's in Facebook Messenger, email, whatever capacity, that I feel so much value comes out. So I'm pleased that we were able to capture that. And when you just think of a lot of the things that Greg said, though we were focused on his expertise and the tools that he uses, can you not see how it expands beyond that? How a lot of what he was saying is just a responsible approach to automating a business. We can never overlook that. We can never overlook that there is a responsible approach. There is a way to do this that we're talking about, right? There's a way to do it to where you still are highly effective, right? You're still highly effective, but highly authentic, and you're not erroneously leaning on your technology to do something that is your responsibility to do and instruct it to do. All right. So who needed to hear this? Who's that Infusionsoft user that's a little frustrated right now. Maybe they just need to recalibrate their approach. Maybe wrong. Infusionsoft by Keep may be the tool for them. And maybe this episode helps shape things up and put things in perspective. Maybe they've been thinking of leaving Infusionsoft and going elsewhere. Whoever that is, send them this episode. Send them this episode so whatever decision they make, it can be an informed decision. Okay. Here at Automation Bridge, remember, we just want you to choose the right tools for your strategy and your business growth. All right. So if you found value in today's episode, now is the time. This is my invitation for my first time listeners. Come join the All Systems Go family. How do you join it? There's a seat at the table. How do you sit down? Go into your podcasting app, wherever you get podcasts, hit the subscribe button. While you're at it, leave a 5-star rating and review. If you are confused in any capacity, how do I leave a review? Where? We've got you covered. Go to automationbridge.com/review. And we will handle the capture and posting of your testimonial for you, or your 5-star rating and review for you. All right. Here at Automation Bridge, we're dedicated to training digital marketing professionals to become automation service providers. These are people who go beyond the principles taught in digital marketing and really focus on those automated systems, starting with marketing and sales, and goes beyond and reaches every operational system in a business to help them scale by maintaining a small footprint, a small human or a small payroll footprint. Okay. And you need, there is an approach and a way to do this. And that is what we train automation service providers on, because businesses need marketers who can handle, who can properly navigate automation by taking marketing technology, your business strategy, aligning it with the goals, and putting software to work, employing software for the responsible deployment of automated systems for your rapid growth. Okay. So if that's you, when you listen to Greg and I talk on this podcast, it feels like you should be at the table with us. You have stories to tell. You've got marketing battlefield scars to show, right? This is you. You would have fit right into this conversation. That is a great indicator that you may make a good automation service provider. So do me a favor, go to automationbridge.com/ASP. And take the next steps to talk to myself or someone on my team to assess if you would be a good fit for our upcoming program launch to become an automation service provider. The need for automation service providers has never been greater. It's never been greater. And we are working in various capacities to equip as many people and businesses with the resources to properly, properly leverage the tools of technology and automation for their business success. I don't want it to be a question mark or a confusing point anymore. Okay. Lastly, if you enjoyed Greg as a guest and you have someone else who would make a great guest for the All Systems Go podcast, or you, yes, you listener, you would make a great guest for the All Systems Go podcast, go to automationbridge.com/podcast. There you can submit your information or your referral information, and they will have an opportunity to come on the podcast. I'll be able to interview them and give some insight to whatever their expertise or area of profession is. All right. All the show notes and podcasts are accessible at automationbridge.com/podcast. You can subscribe there and listen to all and any other episodes at your leisure. So until next time, I see you online. Automate responsibly, my friends.